Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations Podcast. I'm Jeff Gamet. Today is Thursday, September 28th, 2017. With me today, John Martellaro. How are you, John?
I'm very good. Good morning. How are you?
I'm doing all right. Good morning to you. And Jeff Butts, I hope you are well.
I am. Thank you. Thanks for having me.
And thanks for being here. Thanks to both of you for being here. It's always a lot of fun to get to do a show with the two of you. All right, we're just going to hop right into it today. So people have been worried about Face ID much in the same way they were worried about Touch ID when it was first announced, meaning, OMG, people are going to be able to steal my identity through biometric data, and this is just horrible, and we're screwed. So I haven't been thinking that myself because I've been using Touch ID long enough, and I've seen how Apple has worked hard to protect our privacy and maintain security. But that said, there have been some people that are worried, and now Apple has a white paper out where they detail a lot about what's happening with Face ID, and I would love to hear what you guys think about that.
My first reaction was this is the typical kind of thing that happens. The people have sort of shoot from the hip scientific approaches, common memes, silly science fiction references, and then Apple comes out with a white paper that explains how it really happens, that gets into the secure enclave and enrollment faces and neural networks and explains how it really works. And we all go, oh, wow, this is pretty cool what Apple did. That was my first reaction.
I'm not sure it's even that, because most of what I've been seeing is people saying, oh, Samsung did this 2 years ago and you were able to spoof it with a photograph. It's a lack of knowledge. And the knowledge was always there, even before the white paper. It was always clear that it was being done with infrared. It was 3D depth sensor. It was not going to be able to be spoofed by a mask or a photograph.
I saw an article just last month that talked about holding a photograph in front of the phone and saying, oh, Face ID is going to fail.
Yeah.
And I thought, wow. And it was a respectable website, too.
Well, if they'd been trying with Samsung's smartphones, which don't do Face ID. And yes, I totally get Face ID as a marketing term, but they're doing something different for facial recognition. And Samsung's facial recognition was painfully stupid simple to spoof.
Yeah.
All right. Now, here's my question, because I think that Apple's document is in direct response to Senator Al Franken sending Apple a letter
saying, yeah, me too.
I want
absolutely.
You to. Yeah, so he wanted more information about Face ID. Did he send a letter to Samsung when Samsung started rolling out their smartphones with facial recognition?
I don't think so.
Then why did he do it for Apple?
Well, maybe, you know, I looked at Al Franken's questions and some of them were kind of on the pop tech culture side that didn't have a deep understanding of what Apple is doing. It could have been that they were, you know, set up questions, but they also seemed to me kind of like they were a little bit naive and wanted some technical depth that they didn't have. And so that this white paper was written.
All right. So if all
but I think it was because of the criticism, as you just said, Jeff.
Yeah, I think that's exactly it. I think they didn't ask Samsung for that kind of information because they didn't know how easy it was going to be to spoof it.
Well, once that was known, why didn't they send Samsung a letter?
Maybe they did, and we just didn't hear about it.
We would have heard about it because Senator Franken would have put a copy of it on his
webpage. Oh, yeah, you're right. I don't know. Maybe because Apple has been so, some would say, obstinate against law enforcement. They've made such a stand for our privacy.
Yeah.
And Samsung hasn't.
I think you're right. I think you're onto something there, Jeff. There was, in that letter, there was there was a two-pronged approach. There was both sensitivity about how Apple was going to protect the data, but then there was also some curiosity about how law enforcement
how would law deal enforcement with it. Could get a hold of it.
Yeah.
Yep.
You know, I think that maybe I have a bit more of a negative view on this, because I'm feeling like this request for information from Apple was more about publicity and posturing than ensuring that our identities actually are being protected.
You could see that in one of the questions where I presume Al Franken's staffers wrote a question about how to ensure that the app respects the ethnicity of people. In other words, it's able to properly handle the facial recognition of all different kinds of faces of different people in the world, different ethnicities. So there was some sort of political correct attention to detail about how the process would work, not just for, you know, Americans.
Now, isn't that something that Apple addressed when they showed off Face ID?
I don't remember what they did.
Yes, they did. They showed a collage of different ethnicities and people from all walks of life as that they used as their test pool.
Right. Yeah, and they made a point of saying that they used
a billion faces. Range.
Yeah, right.
But not a billion people.
That's right.
And that's an important distinction. They had a lot of people, but they had multiple photos of a lot of people.
Right.
Speaking of multiple photos, there's a method in Face ID to deal with the evolution of your face. So you decide to start growing a beard,
or you
which
go on
some
a
people
diet.
May worry about. Or yeah, so there's a built-in mechanism to deal with that.
See, that's smart. That's exactly what I would expect from any robust facial recognition system.
The other thing that was pointed out in the paper, I think, in response to the Franken letter was that the facial ID information is stored on the phone only in the secure enclave, not uploaded to iCloud as a backup.
Yep.
Which makes sense. That's how Touch ID works also.
Yep.
Yeah. I think what I'm going to do when I'm going to wait to shave off my beard until I get an iPhone 10.
All right.
Then I'm going to set up Face ID. The next day I'm going to shave off my beard and see what happens.
I love this plan.
Oh, yes.
And I'm not saying that because I'm thinking, oh, let's see you without your beard. But from a technical, scientific standpoint, I would love to see how Face ID handles your face.
Yeah.
Well, I think it might ask you to re-enroll in Apple's language.
I think it might. I think it might, but we'll see.
It'll be interesting because you have a pretty awesome beard going on.
Yeah, and it's going to disappoint people when I shave it off, some people. But, you know, it's all in the name of science.
It's for science. You know, yep. I have grown hair and cut hair. Had beards, gotten rid of beards, done weird stuff with my facial hair on many occasions in the name of science.
Yep. If anybody complains, I'll just tell them, wait 6 months, it'll be back.
Yep, there you go.
You know, there's another aspect of this that I don't think people appreciate as an aside, and that is the processing power of your phone. When Phil Schiller, I think it was a year ago, not this recent WWDC, talked about how the iPhone 6S does 100 billion calculations in a tenth of a second to process your photo. I figured out how many teraflops that was. And it's amazing how many calculations per second your phone is capable of. I think people have this feeling that it's a little brick in their hand and just this cutesy little phone that does, you know, a few million operations per second. Oh, no. Oh, no, it does many hundreds of millions.
It is so
billions
powerful.
Of calculations per second.
Well, the idea that we can have a smartphone, a
with
phone
a neural
hand, a
network.
Computer that's barely larger than a deck of cards.
And have a neural network in it.
Yeah.
It's teraflops. Constantly updating its ability.
My iPhone 7 Plus, there's an app that I have on my phone that I can hold my phone up to all four walls in my room. and it will give me precise measurements of that room.
Isn't that just amazing?
Yeah.
And
what's that for? Is that for people who want to paint their room and they need the square footage?
Yeah. Or anybody who's renovating or redecorating, for any purpose that you want to generate a floor plan for your house or just one room, there's you can use ARKit to scan the walls, or you can put the phone up to the wall until it dings and then move to the next wall and just go around the room like that.
Oh, that's nice.
And it handles corners. It handles nice. Diagonals. It's amazing.
So, John, here's another use that you might find handy for something like that. Let's say you want to use one of the apps that that lets you maximize the coverage of your Wi-Fi network. Well, a lot of those, they need to have the floor layout of your place. So instead of going around with a tape measure and measuring off each room and having to build all of that as a map, you can use something like this to create that floor plan for you.
Yep.
And there you go.
Nice.
All right. So my take right now on Apple's response to the Face ID questions is that this really was totally in reaction to Senator Franken's letter. And I'm just not that impressed with Senator Franken sending the letter in this case, because I haven't seen the same letter go to Samsung.
Right. Yeah, I'll agree with you. Yeah. I'm trying to remember if Apple announced during the keynote that this white paper was going to come out.
I don't recall that happening.
I don't remember that.
I know they announced they were working on it at some point, but I think that might have been after Al Franken's letter to them.
Well, you know, these security white papers are typical from Apple. They have published white papers like this before.
Yeah.
On iOS security, macOS security, file vault security, things like that. So it's part and parcel of what they do.
I think it's a response to Franken's letter, but I think it might also just be standard operating procedure. So, because some of this information developers need to have to know how they can and cannot interact with Face ID.
And there's a comment in this white paper about how the facial recognition could be a bit challenged between twins or between children under the age of 13 who are growing rapidly. And I just saw an article on the internet this morning that treated that like as some sort of, oh, here's a huge weakness in Apple's facial ID.
Of course. Yeah. I mean, Apple is the big man on campus, so to speak.
Yeah.
Apple is up on the pedestal. And so people love to knock the hero off the pedestal. So anything that can be latched onto to make it look like Apple is failing, they're incompetent,
and
people are going to grab that.
And what it fails to recognize is the fact that by the time twins reach a certain age, they start to grow apart in terms of how identical they are. I've seen it. I've got brother-in-laws who are twins, and I've seen it in them. When they hit their teenage years, they went off their separate ways as far as how they looked. It was much more difficult to tell them apart when they were preteens than it is now that they're 18, 19 years old.
You know, my mom is an identical twin. Mm-hmm. And growing up, I mean, I could always tell my mom and my aunt apart, just no problem. But that's because I grew up with that.
Right.
But it was amazing how many people could not tell them apart, even as adults.
Really?
And yeah. Okay. And to me, they look radically different. But now that they're much older than they were back then, it is finally, I think, pretty easy to tell them apart for the average person. But I guess the real point is I totally get that identical twins could throw almost any facial recognition system for a loop. I know photos at the time iPhoto eventually just gave up on identifying my mom and my aunt in photographs. It couldn't do it. And every time it was wrong, and I would fix it give it the correct information. And eventually it just stopped picking them out of photos, period.
Gotcha.
And to this day, still won't even try to identify either of them.
Yeah.
Anyhow. All right. Well, I want to talk some about Amazon too.
Oh,
and,
goody.
Yeah. And specifically, I want to talk about the Echo Plus. So here's the deal. Yesterday, Amazon had a little press event thing where they introduced their whole new Echo product line. So the new Echo is about, I want to say, like two-thirds the height of the current model. Mm-hmm. And it comes with a fabric shell instead of the perforated plastic. But you can also get alternate shells to put on it so it better matches the space that it's in. So better speakers, better microphones, and a smaller size. Then there's the Echo Plus, which looks like the current Echo. So, you know, the taller cylinder, plastic, perforated sides. And same thing, better speakers, better microphones. This one also has a built-in Zigbee smart home hub. And then there's another one, the Echo Spot, which is designed to go like in your bedroom on your desk, and it's a small thing. It has a little display on it. So I'm looking at all these devices yesterday, and the announcement that they're designed for multi-room audio playback. And I'm also looking at what they've done with the speakers and the microphones, and I'm thinking, all right, so this is Amazon's play to get everyone's attention and potentially dollars before HomePod comes out this December.
Yeah.
Oh, by the way, the new Echo, $99.
Yeah.
Yeah, the Echo Plus is, I think, $149.
And why is the Spot $129?
It's an LCD display.
Yeah, it has that display.
I guess.
It also has a camera.
Oh, does it?
Yeah.
I missed that.
What's the camera used for?
To spy on you in your bed. So be careful what you do.
Of course. Like the Echo Look.
It's for video calls.
Oh, I'll bet someone will. Look at me. I'm growing a beard. I'm so sick. My eyes are red. I can't show up to work today.
Yeah, just print out a photo of yourself and hold it up to the,
yeah,
the camera.
My first reaction is probably unwarranted. And that is that, boy, these things are coming out fast. But it just seems that way. I mean, the standard Echo has been around for quite a while now. It was time.
Yeah, it's
for an update.
It's been 2 years since the last update, as I recall.
Yeah, I know. It just seems like Amazon is just. I think it was the new devices that came out this spring and summer. What was it? The Echo Look and
Echo Show.
Yeah, and so it just seems like there's this so many of these devices coming out so fast. But you're right, Jeff. They got to grab all the money they can before the HomePod comes out.
Well, and they're hitting different use scenarios.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know, they're not just putting out one $349 device. They're putting out multiple devices at multiple price points so that you can pick one that appeals to your budget and to how you're going to use it.
Yep.
Well, that could be an effective market strategy, but, you know, Apple doesn't go that route, and there'll be people who appreciate the stability and the quality of the single Apple product. So there's really two market segments. So Amazon is grabbing one part of it, and I think Apple's grabbing the other.
Yeah,
I agree. And I think what Amazon is hoping is that they can lure some people away from what I'll call the HomePod mentality market with the price points and features that they're offering on the Echo. And my guess is that there are some Echo users that have been thinking, all right, so when HomePod comes out, I'm switching to that. And with the new products that Amazon announced yesterday, some of those people are thinking, oh, well, actually, I can upgrade to a newer Echo model for a fraction of the cost, and everything still works the way it has, but I have better sound. Why shouldn't I do that? And I can
get a Zigbee controller built into it.
Right. And I believe the Echo, I think it's the Echo, you can buy a 3-pack and get a $50 discount.
Yes. I'm pretty sure you're right.
Yeah. So
here's where I think Amazon dropped the ball.
Okay.
They advertised the Echo Plus as having a Zigbee controller.
Mm-hmm.
Most people don't know what Zigbee is.
Yeah, that's true.
And I mean, for instance, I still don't know for sure that Philips Hue bulb that comes with the Echo Plus, can it be controlled by the Zigbee controller, or do you have to have a Hue hub to control it?
Oh, if it's
being bundled with the Echo Plus, I would assume that there's some way to control it just from the Zigbee hub, but that's never been made clear.
That's a really good question. I know, at least as it stands today, any Hue smart bulb product you have needs to have a hub.
So they're not Zigbee compatible.
That would seem likely.
Okay.
I have a question.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm looking around the internet and I don't see a single picture of an Echo Spot with a red ring. Maybe it doesn't have it. Maybe it's always on.
My guess is that an Echo Spot, instead of showing you a red ring, would give you some other on-screen indicator.
Perhaps. I haven't found an article that describes that yet. I'm curious about that.
Maybe instead of the clock face that I've seen some of the product shots on, it changes to, a computer equalizer bar.
That could be. Yeah,
like Siri.
John, part of the reason you may not be seeing images like that is because currently all the images that we're using, when I say we, I mean everyone, they're the PR shots that Amazon has released.
Yeah. I'm looking at an article from The Verge. It says Amazon's Echo Spot is a sneaky way to get a camera into your bedroom.
Yeah, and I don't think the Spot has FCC approval yet.
Right. It's not coming out as soon as the Echo and Echo Show, or excuse me, Echo Plus. Those are available for pre-order now, and they ship in the next month.
I think you're right.
And I believe the Echo Spot is slated to come out a little after them.
Echo Spot is slated to come out in December.
There we go. That's what it
December
was.
December 19th for the Echo Spot. Echo Plus, October 31st.
And the Echo will be the same day.
October 31st.
Yeah.
Yep.
So there you go. That's probably to accommodate FCC approval time.
Yeah. You know what we haven't mentioned?
Tell me.
The Echo Connect.
Oh, that's right. So there's the Echo Connect, which lets you use your Echo essentially as a phone.
Yeah. It connects to your home phone, and it doesn't matter if it's a wired landline or voice over IP line.
Yeah.
So you just plug your Echo Connect into your phone jack, sync it up with your Echo Dot, Echo, Echo Plus, whatever, and then you can make regular phone calls just using your voice and your Echo.
But Jeff Gamet, mm-hmm. you pointed out a weakness of that system previously about if somebody knows your number.
Oh yeah, the current system, there's no way to block an incoming call. So someone just needs to know your number, your Amazon ID, something, and then they can just contact you right through your Echo. Yeah.
Yeah, this Echo Connect, all it does is allow you to use your home phone with your Echo, which you cannot currently do without this device.
So for some people, I'm sure that'll be cool. As far as I know, based on my anecdotal evidence, people really aren't using the Echo to Echo communication thing.
No, the last time I used it was when I pestered you at a cafe.
Yeah, and it worked really well.
Yeah.
So
the other thing that's hitting the internet is the integration between the Fire TV and the Echo.
Oh, yeah.
Something I want to look into.
Mm. Well, you'll have to look into that and then report back to me on what you find, because we're out of time and we have to wrap up.
Oops. What?
Again? I know. Yep. Every single time.
Man.
John, thank you for being here today.
Oh, you're welcome. My pleasure.
And Jeff, thank you for being here as well.
Always a blast, man.
It was loads of fun. And listeners, thank you for joining us. We will see everyone again tomorrow.